How do they get away with it? You know who I mean. The Ponzi schemers and inside traders, the sexual assaulters and political manipulators. In recent years, notoriously bad actors have been exposed for crimes small and large. But what's often most shocking about these misdeeds is how long they've gone unpunished. Now, CNN legal correspondent and former prosecutor Ellie Honig explains how our two-tier justice system lets the rich, famous, and powerful off the hook time and again. Here's Ellie with five big ideas from Untouchable: How Powerful People Get Away With It.
Hi, this is Ellie Honig. I'm a former federal and state prosecutor. I'm now a CNN senior legal analyst, a best-selling author, Emmy nominee, true crime podcast host, weekly columnist, and college lecturer. Here I'm going to share with you five insights from my new book, Untouchable: How Powerful People Get Away With It. I hope this gives you an insider's view into the criminal justice system and how it really works. First, prosecutors. Some fear, a bit of favor. People sometimes ask me if it was scary to take on murderous mafia bosses. The answer, truthfully, is no. In a sense, it was easy. As the prosecutor, you're the good guy, the hero, Captain America. But I'll tell you what is scary. Going after a powerful politician or CEO or celebrity who will battle you every millimeter of the way, claim he's been falsely accused, and do a public relations tour to discredit your entire case and maybe you personally. That's scary. Prosecutors love to remind the world that we do our jobs without fear or favor. But the fact is, we do approach certain subjects with more trepidation than others. Exhibit A, the Justice Manual, DOJ's own formal written guidance to all federal prosecutors across the country. The manual specifically requires higher levels of internal review and approval before charges can be filed against powerful or prominent people, or in cases likely to result in wide media coverage. For example, I once had a case in which a famous Major League Baseball player was caught up in a gambling ring with some gangsters. An ordinary gambling case would have never risen above my fairly low level. But because this case involved a celebrity, we had to send it up the chain of command to the head of the office's criminal division for review. We ultimately decided not to charge the ballplayer, but rather to use him as a witness against the real gangsters. It's perfectly reasonable and even appropriate for prosecutors to give extra scrutiny to high-profile cases. Failure in one headline case can undermine public confidence in the prosecutor's office and the criminal justice system in a way that can't be offset even by years of good work on routine matters. But it also leads inevitably to this outcome. The bar is higher for prosecutors to charge rich people, powerful people, and celebrities than to charge ordinary folks. Insight number two. Nothing protects power like power itself. Picture the barbecue scene in the movie Goodfellas. An enforcer comes over to the boss, Pauly Cicero, and whispers something quickly in his ear. Pauly gives a silent nod, and that's that. The crew springs into action. As Ray Liotta's character says in narration, "For a guy who moved all day long, Pauly didn't talk to six people." That scene is entirely consistent with how real-world criminal leaders do business, at least the smart ones. To quote a real-life mobster as he put it while unwittingly being recorded by an informant in one of my cases, "If you step on a cockroach, you're gonna tell the whole world about it." Tactics designed to insulate the boss are by no means restricted to the mafia. Criminal powerhouses across industries recognize that it would be foolish and reckless to talk to more people than necessary. When they do talk, savvy kingpins make their intent known by creeping right up to the line of explicit criminality while leaving just enough wiggle room to deny responsibility. Bosses delegate and leave the dirty work to the underlings, and then blame them when things go bad. For example, CEOs at financial titans from Enron to HealthSouth to WorldCom have offered variations of the so-called idiot defense. How was I to know what my employees were doing? Even if prosecutors do manage to flip one player in the criminal chain, that person might not have had direct contact with the boss himself. In one case of mine, for example, an Illinois state trooper made a traffic stop on a swerving SUV and found 200 kilos of cocaine worth about $5 million total in the trunk, destined for New York. We flipped the driver, and then used his information to nab his immediate supplier and the mid-level players who were supposed to receive his delivery. But none of them cooperated, and the case hit a dead end. Those kilos belonged to somebody much higher up the chain who stood to make the most money off the deal, but we never could figure out who. Indeed, nothing protects power like power itself. Insight number 3, juries. Only human after all. While the numbers vary by jurisdiction, on the whole, juries return guilty verdicts more often than not. This held true in my own experience, thankfully. But it can be particularly difficult to convince a jury to convict a famous or powerful person. Remember that a conviction requires unanimity, and that a lone holdout means a mistrial. We tend to think of the jury as some monolithic soothsayer, but in fact it's just 12 strangers thrown together by chance, ordinary people with the full range of human fear and anxiety, trying to render a verdict and get on with their lives. Judges tell jurors to put aside their personal beliefs and feelings and to decide the case based on a cold assessment of the facts and the law. But that instruction is a well-intentioned artifice. Wide-lens studies have shown that even in routine criminal cases, jurors commonly experience fear and anxiety. I saw countless potential jurors try to bail out of cases involving mobsters or other violent criminals, claiming they'd be too afraid to return guilty verdicts. One study concluded that jurors are usually sufficiently attuned to their environment to realize when the situation warrants extra scrutiny. Sure, judges tell juries not to read any press about high-profile trials, but that direction is hopelessly out of step with human nature. Curiosity is a powerful pull, and if anything, it has become all but impossible to avoid media coverage in the age of social media. And if a juror fears retribution, either directly from a defendant or in the form of wide public attention or condemnation, then it can swing the outcome of a case involving a bold-faced name. Insight number 4, the Supreme Court. Tawdry and distasteful, but perfectly legal. In 2014, a federal jury convicted former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife for taking over $175,000 worth of gifts, including an engraved Rolex and a $19,000 shopping spree in New York City from the owner of a shady company that made nutritional supplements. In exchange, the governor and his wife ordered state health officials to meet with the company's owner, tried to get public universities to conduct studies to legitimize the supplements, and used the governor's mansion to host promotional events for the company. A federal court of appeals upheld the convictions. But in 2016, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously threw out the guilty verdicts. The Supreme Court ruled that while the McDonald's conduct was, quote, tawdry and, quote, distasteful, it was not illegal, so long as McDonald did not take some more formal, more obvious step in exchange for gifts, like casting a vote or vetoing legislation, he was in the clear. The court's opinion united left with right, conservative with liberal, Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer in a kumbaya quest to water down the nation's federal corruption laws. The fallout from the decision was swift, leading to the collapse of other corruption cases against elected officials in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Louisiana. In fact, in the 6+ years since the McDonald decision, no U.S. representative, no U.S. senator, no federal cabinet secretary or other senior executive branch official, no federal judge, and no state governor has been successfully prosecuted under the narrowed down federal corruption law. Zero. A frustrated veteran corruption prosecutor put it to me this way. Now, unless we catch a guy on videotape accepting a cash-filled envelope marked bribe money for votes, there's just no way to charge anyone with anything anymore. Insight number 5, one man above the law. In a nation of laws, one person stands above and beyond, the very official charged with executing those laws, the President of the United States. It's commonly said that the Justice Department can't indict a sitting president, but that's not quite right. Rather, in 1973, the Justice Department adopted an internal memo declaring that it shouldn't even try to indict the president. The memo grapples less with pure constitutional analysis, does the law permit indictment of a sitting president, than with practical concerns. How on earth would our government function if the president was indicted? But the Justice Department's no indictment memo is neither exclusive nor conclusive. In fact, DOJ has at times taken the position that a sitting president can be indicted. For example, in a 1974 Supreme Court brief filed after DOJ adopted the aforementioned memo, Watergate prosecutors argued that, quote, it is an open and substantial question whether an incumbent president is subject to indictment. The truth is, we simply don't know. The Constitution itself is silent on the issue. Congress has never weighed in, and no prosecutor has ever put it to the test in the courts. At bottom, much of our collective hesitation springs from a prevailing sense that it simply doesn't feel American to slap handcuffs on a president, or even a former president. Only other countries lock up their fallen leaders, their vanquished political adversaries. But in fact, plenty of stable, developed democracies have brought criminal charges against former presidents or prime ministers in recent years, and they've survived just fine. Since 2000, France, Italy, Israel, South Korea, South Africa, and Iceland, among others, have criminally charged their own democratically elected former leaders without devolving into chaos or civil war. We like to believe the axiom that nobody is above the law, but we ought to add a qualifier, except the president. No person is as insulated from the criminal justice process as the sitting occupant of the Oval Office, and there is no close second place. Thanks very much for checking out these insights. I really hope you enjoy the new book, Untouchable: How Powerful People Get Away With It.
Thank you, Ellie. That was Ellie Honig with 5 big ideas from Untouchable: How Powerful People Get Away With It. If you're hungry for more detail on just how they get away with it, check out our book bite for Servants of the Damned: Giant Law Firms, Donald Trump, and the Corruption of Justice by David Enrich. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.